hello, and thank you for joining me for another episode of Grant Francis Does a Podcast. In this episode, it's another Mayflower Meets, and we meet an actor probably most famous for his role in Holby City, playing Sasha Levy. I'm speaking to Bob Barrett, who's about to appear in an Agatha Christie play at the Mayflower Theatre, and Then There Were None. This podcast is produced by The Useful Media Company, and you'll find it in all of your usual podcast providers. Please like, follow, and subscribe, Grant Francis UK. As always, I started by finding out just where the bug for acting bit Bob.
I think I was the first time I ever did anything in front of an audience. I was 8, and I was at school, and I did a one, and I went, it was a poetry competition. I stood on stage. And I won it. I won the poetry competition. I just read a Wordsworth poem. And it was the first time I went on stage. And what was weird is I then kept doing that. And then I did a play when I was, did Pirates of Penzance when I was 11. And someone from a drama school said to my mum, he should go to drama school. And she was amazing, my mum. I mean, she died. She unfortunately, she very incredibly tragically died very soon after that. But she wanted me to finish my education. But I was at a school, because then I did all the plays and I just knew it's what I wanted to do. But I was at a school, I was at a private school where they didn't rate acting as a career. I remember someone, one of the people, the guy who was the usher of the school, which is one of the high points, we wore a gown all the time. He said, you can't be an actor. It's a ridiculous thing to do. It's not a profession. He said, if you want to show off, just be a politician. And I was like, I don't want to be a politician. I didn't want to be a politician. I just want to be an actor, you know. So I didn't really have the guts to try for drama school until I was at Old Belfast University and I was with normal people who all said, get a drama school. So I tried and I got in and that was it.
I mean, it's but been really, a...
Sorry?
Go on.
It was really from the beginning, from like when I was a kid, really young, actually.
I mean, you've got quite an accolade of TV shows and stage appearances behind you. Everything from Shakespeare up to Guys and Dolls and musicals. Yes. Now, every actor wants to be in Shakespeare and to do all of those big shows and things. But what's the for you as a performer? How do you go between Hamlet and Guys and Dolls?
you've got to be, I think you've got to be somebody with an open mind. I think that helps. I've never thought of that before. You've got to be someone who is just up for anything, really. And I think you always want to do something that's different from the last thing you did. So when you've done, I mean, I do Shakespeare forever, but you if you've got that and then someone offers you a musical, because I'm not a singer. I mean, I play Big Julie in it. I can sing, but I'm not a proper big singer. But I just thought, oh, yeah. And the guy who directed it was a great friend of mine. And I thought, yeah, I'll do that. And that's kind of, I'm sort of up for anything, really. I mean, you know, I there are things you think, oh, I couldn't face that. But actually, you just want to be, and also it all helps with what you get to do, you know. I mean, you then can use things. So if you've done something very populist or something that's, you know, a long-running thing on a television series, you can use that in Shakespeare. Everything is usable. Everything is in the mix. Everything's in the stew. You know, you can sort of just go, well, I'll use that bit there, even though it might not be right for this. Let's give it a go and see what happens. So I think it's a bit like that.
When you're not on stage or on a film set or in a TV studio, what's your go-to thing to relax? What is your kind of escape?
Oh, my escape from the work.
Yeah.
My family. I've got an amazing family. We spend a lot of time together. I listen to music. I mean, I'm a music obsessive. It's my religion. I read a lot. So things like that. I watch a stupid amount of television. Always weird things like lots of sport. I watch lots of sport and stuff like that. But actually, it is relaxing doing it. I know that sounds weird, but it is a relaxing thing. I mean, I remember when we were on set, I just would like to talk to other people on it. And also depends on the character. I think particularly on a set, if you're someone who is ebullient and friendly and all that sort of stuff, it's useful chatting to everyone. I mean, I do that anyway, but if you were playing someone very remote, I don't get many of those. I've got one in this. I find myself being quieter with and having more time to myself.
Yeah, I was going to ask, does that character affect your personality yeah. when you're at work? 100%. And it kind of crosses over into the real world? Because I should imagine if you're playing somebody that is, you know, a depressive, you need to come away from things and shake it off.
You do. You really do. Because, I mean, I had a storyline when I did Holby where my character became depressed, clinically depressed. And that was really interesting because I was known as the happy, you know, the jolly, happy character in it. So that, but it was a really clever storyline because obviously, you know, you don't know who has depression because people cover it up. So my character covered it up really well and they brought it out on a special episode where we had one whole hour on it. And it was interesting because it was like people were worried for me. Are you okay? And I said, yeah, I'm fine. I'm just, you know, I'm using it to get into this and everything. And I did it again, a friend of mine directed it. So we had a lovely time. We had a laugh on set, but there were moments when I was allowed to just go off and do my thing. You know, so that was quite interesting.
Yeah, you're right. You just have to kind of take a breath and go, okay, that's not me. I am this happy person. And it's amazing how it gets into your brain.
I can't see. I mean, there's that great quote of Olivier's when he says, you know, I always leave the character at the stage door. And I wish I could do it. I'd love to do that. I'd love to be able to do that. Unfortunately, I can't. It has to stay with me the whole time. You know, there's a couple of times my wife, who is an actress as well, who understands, has said, you know, after I've done a play or done something, she'll say, isn't it about, can you come back to us? Can you just come back to us? Because I'm somewhere else. You know, and she's so amazing and so understanding about it. But you just do, you get caught up in stuff completely because but I know some actors who can drop it. You know, it's an amazing skill. They're brilliant actors and they can just drop it like that. But I can't, sadly. I'm not.
There are obviously differences between TV and theatre. But where do you think you've learned the most lessons to be the actor that you are today?
I think you're learning stuff all the time. I think there's, you know, every day is a school day, really. I mean, there are things that happen, you know, like yesterday something happened and I was like, oh my God, I've thought about that. And then you move on from it. Experience is the most important thing. You have to getting to do it is incredibly important. I mean, there are weeks, particularly with Holby, because I was on it for so long. There were weeks I was more my character than I was me. You know, you're on set for hours and hours and hours and doing a massive storyline. And you were more, I'd go home, go to bed, come back again, and I'd be the character again. So you're completely. So I think that thing of being someone else a lot, you know, when you're doing a play, you're only doing it in the evenings or if you've got a matinee. So you come and you're a character for 3 hours, but sometimes on television you're a character for, well, 12 years. So you learn, you get inside the character probably more than you would normally, I would think. So I learned a lot doing that. I learned a hell of a lot doing that, actually. Because, you know, you just want to get better and better at it. You know, that's the thing. That's all you're trying to do. It's just go try and learn more and get better and watch other people and just glean as much as you can from it. but that probably the thing of doing it, of just being someone else for long periods of time, it helps enormously, I think.
So you say you play a character for a long time.
Yeah.
And then people come and see you on stage as something completely different. Are they expecting to see the person they know up there? Do you think that's a hard transition for the audience?
Well, I have asked because I've done this. People who've obviously seen Holby have come and seen this play. And I'm totally different. I'm playing a doctor. Both are doctors, but a totally different character. And they haven't said, oh, you know, you weren't like Sasha. they're just happy to see it and say, oh, it's nice to see you doing something different, you know. So they're being very understanding about it. They're not going, oh, I don't like, you know, you're not being that guy who I saw on television. But they're very nice. They'll say, oh, I really enjoyed that. I loved Holby. But now I'm in liking you seeing this. So actually, they're very understanding. I think there is a difference between, I've been with people who've done soap operas like EastEnders and Coronation Street. And I think because you're on screen so much, I think you are just completely identified as that character. But I think doing Holby, it was only an hour a week. People can see that that's who you are in that, but also you can be other things as well, I think. So
Curly Watts is always Curly Watts.
Yes, Curly Watts is always Curly Watts.
Yeah.
God bless him, genius.
Absolutely.
Amazing. I love Curly Watts.
Has there ever been that moment when someone says, is there a doctor in the house? And you're like, no, hang on a minute.
I hope they bloody don't, because I don't know anything about it.
You got all the words and you can pronounce all the things.
No, I couldn't. I was terrible. I mean, I love doing it and I love being playing a doctor, but I learned a terrifyingly small amount from it when I came out. We were told how to do it, you know, and I love doing it. And I think my character was very much, he had a bedside manner. I think that was one of his things. And then he was a successful surgeon, but
How do you cope with all of that blood and guts and things and actually doing the, like, faking the procedures?
It was great. I loved it. I loved doing the operations. But no, not many of the other actors do, because it's very quite claustrophobic in there. And you've got the... But I used to love it. I used to absolutely love it. I used to get stuck into it completely. It was really amazing. And some of the things that happened in there were just so funny. Because it's madness. I mean, you're there with a bit of rubber, which they fashioned to look exactly like a human, internal organs. You've got blood, guts everywhere. You've got all those things. You've got a mask on. You've got the whole thing. I loved it. I love playing doctors and nurses. This is basically what it is.
It's the ultimate child's game, isn't it? Doctors and nurses, and actually getting there and playing.
Only with lots of successful people helping you with prosthetics. So it's like, it's posh doctors and nurses, basically.
Is going to work for you going to work, or is it just an extension of the joy of life?
Oh, that's a great question. Yes, it's the extent. It's an extension of the joy of life. That's a brilliant way of putting it. It's exactly, it's not like, oh, I've got to go to work now. It's like, great. I love it so much. I love it so much. You know, and it is like an extension. It is like an extension of life. You go. It's. We are. I mean, everyone says it. We are very lucky to get to do this, to get to play, you know, and be other people and do all that. And I think it is. It really is. It's a thrill, and it's never gone away. I hope it never does. I think if it does, it'd be awful. If you were like, oh God, I've got to go. And I think back, and I think there's nothing really. I mean, there are a lot of really long-running things where you're in the same theatre and it's a maybe, but not really. He pinches it. When you feel that way, you just put yourself together and go, oh, come on, you know, Jesus Christ, what would you rather be doing, you know? Yeah. So actually, pretty much the whole of my career, I've loved it.
Is there something that you want to do that you haven't done yet, or somebody that you would love to work with that you haven't yet had that chance to...
The people I'd love to work with, I don't tend to think in that way. I just think, I wonder what the next thing will be, and then it comes up if it's something I really want to do. There are parts I want to play in Shakespeare, but you know, if it happens, it happens. You know, I was never when I was young, I never wanted to play all the parts that all the people tend to want to play, like Hamlet and Henry V and, you know, Romeo and all these parts. I've never wanted, but I really wanted to play Falstaff. All my life I've wanted to play Falstaff, and now I suppose I'm getting to the age where I could. But, you know, that way lies madness, because you go, oh my God, I want to play, you know, so you just hope for the best. With people, I mean, the one person I'd love to work with in film in this country would be Ken Loach. But the chances of me working with Ken Loach are so remote, you know. And also, I don't know if I hope he makes as many movies as he can. But I know he's getting older now, and I don't know if he will. I mean, I think he will, because I think he's that kind of person. But he's my favourite, by miles, my favourite film director in this country. So I'd love to be happy, mate. Mate of mine is just that. So I, Daniel Blake, which is one of my favourite ever movies, a friend of mine's just played the stage version. David Nellist, who's a wonderful actor, who I did Dickens with, and he's done that. And it's, I'm thrilled he got the chance to do that, because I think, you know, but who knows? Anyone will have me. I'll work with anyone who has me.
Just enjoy the work and get on with it.
Still enjoy the work.
Yeah. You're on tour at the moment in an Agatha Christie play,
yes.
And Then There Were None. You're currently in,
yes,
Birmingham. You're coming to the Mayflower Theatre in Southampton very soon. Tell me a bit about the play and being in this murder mystery, I guess, whodunit.
Yes, which is it is a whodunit. It absolutely is a whodunit. So my wife is doing a thing called Murder in the Dark at the same time, and that's more of a murder mystery, I suppose. But this is a whodunit because it's an Agatha Christie. It's not just her most successful novel. It's, I think, one of the most successful novels of all time. Definitely the most successful novel of the genre of murder mystery, the murder mystery genre. So it's a real privilege to get to do it, because I think it's rarely done, because it is a big deal. And for the Agatha Christie fans in the world, of which there are millions and millions and millions, it's the jewel in the crown. And the reason is, I think, probably is because there isn't a Poirot and there isn't a Marple. There's no detective to solve the crime. So it's just 10 people on an island who are taken to an island and thinking they're there for one reason, and actually they're there for another, to be accused of something they've done in their past. And so they're not very nice people, for a start. There's no real, like, oh, I really like that character. The audience are kind of freed up to go, ooh, they're all horrible. They're all not very nice people. So that's kind of, doesn't mean I have the responsibility to like that person or not like that person. I can think what I want. And I think that's the key to the whole thing. And I think the audiences feel very free to really enjoy, and they're empowered to really enjoy it, because in a way, they're the detective. The audience get to choose. They don't get to choose, but they get to just, you know, try and work out throughout the play who's done it. Not knowing that there isn't going to be a Poirot or a Marple at the end to tell them. So it's been a really exciting thing to do. The production is, I'm going to say obviously, but it's a particularly good production. We have a director who's amazing at Shakespeare and all sorts of things. She's one of our best directors, but she's also brilliant at these kind of shows, because she just pushes the bar and creates a real sort of atmosphere. And it has a sort of epic quality, which a lot of these Agatha Christies don't tend to have. They're more sort of, because they're always usually in one room. You know, witness of the prosecution is in court. You know, this is just in one set. But she just pushes it further. And so the audiences have found it incredibly thrilling. So yes, so it's really good. And I'm playing a doctor. As you know.
playing on the doctor from a different era. It's more like...
From a different era. Well, the era's key, because obviously it's set in the 30s, set in 1939. So it's really exciting to do something of a different period. And I think, again, people like that. People like coming... It's a slight escapism to look at, you know, England in the 30s as opposed to England now. You know, and they like the recognition of the fact that, you know, there's no mobile phones, there's no obviously, so it's just watching people from a different era and how they behave with each other and what they're like. And I think that's again a really great hook for the show.
It almost seems like the 1930s was a simpler kind of time, but more 100%. Polite as well, I think. You have to put in a different performance to be that character, I suppose.
Yes, because they are polite. I mean, what's brilliant about this play is they start off being very polite with each other, you know, because that's the way they were taught and that's the way they are. Now, most of them are very successful people as well. So they have that sort of stature. Then as the play goes on and things fall apart, they all fall apart as well. So it's really interesting. You get both sides of the coin. You get how they would behave normally, but then also how they would behave under incredible stress and extreme pressure, which is what she does best. She's amazingly good at writing about people who are pushed to their limits and how they then behave and the kind of people they become. And she's fantastic at that. So that's also what the play is about as well.
We talked earlier about what you'd learned from stage and TV and film acting, but what have you learned either as an actor or just in yourself from this performance from And There Were None?
I've done plays in the period before, but I think so I've learned a lot about the period, which is good. I don't know. I think oh, it's a really good question. I don't know. It's to do with the way in which the type of part it is. I haven't really ever on stage played a part like this, so it has been quite interesting playing a part like this, who has a sort of status, and how that status is then falling apart. And I mean, I suppose the hook of the character is he's an expert on nerves. He's a nerve specialist. That's his field, special field. And he has trouble with his own nerves. And so that's been a really interesting thing to play. That's what I've loved doing every night. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but he kind of falls apart slowly during the play. And I've loved that. I've done that before with other parts, but not in this way. So that's been really exciting. Sounds strange. You have a nervous breakdown on stage, but you go, that's a bit odd. You like that, but actually we're strange people.
It's a big fall, isn't it? Because the 1930s status was everything. So a doctor was well up there in the ranking. For him to command a room and be the interesting person and the authority, to then have all of that fall apart as the play goes on, and like you say, have a nervous breakdown and spiral into this completely broken person is an interesting journey for you to go on.
It's an amazing journey. I mean, that's why I did it. That's what hooked me into it. I thought, I really want to do that. I really want to explore that. Because being Agatha Christie, she sets the bar so high. She makes you sort of like a, what's the question? He's a Harley Street specialist. He's a world-renowned nerve specialist. He's not like just a commoner garden GP. You know, he's a top-flight doctor. So she sets the bar very high for that. And then because they're in this environment, that just falls apart. And that's what's fascinating about it. That's what's really interesting to play, is watching how they all just fall apart. And to make the journey as big as I can has been really exciting. Really, really exciting. So yeah, that's been the best bit.
For somebody that enjoys going to the theatre but hasn't perhaps been to a full-on play before, maybe they've been to musicals and things, what would you say to that person to say, do you know what, give it a go?
I would say that if you're going to make a step into it from watching musicals all the time, this is one of the best I mean, I'm going to say obviously, but one of the best things to do, because actually it's going to challenge you, but it's not going to challenge you to the point where you go, I don't know what the hell's going on. It's so clear what's going on. So it will be, you know, no one's going to break into song. No one's going to do all that. It's not going to be, it's an entertainment, but it's an entertainment in a different way. So I would say, you know, if you like watching Morse on television, or, you know, Midsummer Murders, or you like, because basically so many things we watch are murder mysteries on television. Father Brown, I mean, I did a Father Brown last year, it was, you know, and all that sort of stuff. This isn't the same ilk. So I think probably if you were going to go, do you know what? I've seen loads of musicals now and I want to see a play. This is a golden one to watch. It's not too long. It's not going to go. The language is incredibly sort of easy to understand. And I think, but also you get what one of the best things we've had. I've had people stop me and say afterwards, we loved it. We're off now. We're going to talk about it now. We're going to go and have dinner and we're going to talk about the play. It makes people talk about, you know, the play. It makes people get engaged with it. So actually, I think it's a perfect thing to segue into, I would say. I would.
Do you know, that's a lovely idea, isn't it? Almost, you could almost have a pre or a post performance dinner with the audience. Yes. And actually just sit down and talk. Wouldn't it be just to go over, oh, this was that and that was this and this is what I thought about it and what you thought. Maybe that, you know.
Well, we haven't done that. I mean, normally when you do productions, there is genuinely on tour once a week where the audience can ask you questions and you come back afterwards and you get a drink and you sit round and you have a chat. Well, we've done it once in Bath, which is wonderful. We met some punters before the show and that was really exciting. I wish we did it more. I mean, I love doing that. I love it when you get to talk to the audience. You know, they can ask you any questions they want, you know, and some of them can say, I hated it, blah, blah, blah. But you give them a chance to ask you questions and answer back, you know. And so I think it's the right of the audience to get to do that.
Nice to have a bit of a Q&A. So you're coming to the Mayflower in Southampton.
I think the 8th. And we're there for 8 shows. It's a huge theatre. It's the biggest we play. It's 2,300, I think, seater. It's selling really well. So, you know, please come. It's going to be the last hurrah. Then the show goes to China. I'm not sadly not going with it, but other people are going. So, but it's you know, it's easier to come to Southampton than go to China. It's slightly easier. And we're coming down. So, I mean, I lost it. I mean, I've got family in Winchester, or used to have family in Winchester. And I love the area so much. It's a golden place to come to. And what a place to finish will be Southampton. Can't wait.
What's on the horizon for you? What's next after this show?
I did a version of 12 Nights, and that's going to happen again. And a friend of mine's doing a movie, and I think hopefully I might be in that. That's a possibility. So there are things coming up which are very exciting. I'll miss this because it's been amazing. It's been an amazing job. Met some amazing people who will be hopefully with lifelong friends. And yeah, it's been fantastic, brilliantly run. Furry Angel, who's the production company, I've never worked with them before, and they've looked after us better than any production company I've ever worked for. Actually, they've been unbelievable, how great they've been. And with Lucy, the director, who's been amazing. So we've been very lucky with this one, really lucky, actually. So I won't miss it. But there's other things. There's other things to do. So that's good.
It's been wonderful speaking to you on the podcast.
You've been amazing. You've been fantastic.
Oh, well, thank you.
Such amazing. You've been fantastic. I could have talked for hours.
Well, please do. Next time.
With you. Next time. Fingers crossed. Next time.
You can see Bob Barrett in the Agatha Christie best-selling crime novel of all time, And Then There Were None, at the Mayflower Theatre from the 8th to the 13th of April 2024. Find out more and get tickets at mayflower.org.uk. Please like, follow and subscribe to Grant Francis UK in all of your socials. This podcast is produced by The Useful Media Company. Until next time, I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.